The Trump administration has been cutting, even eliminating, federal funding for research projects at colleges and universities. Instead, the administration wants federal funds to go to private companies looking to do research and ideas that the administration sees as priorities and agrees with. The defense of this policy change, in part, is that universities are doing, you know the word, woke research, and they're being left unchecked, unsupervised. Is that true? My next guest is here to share his expert insight into research at universities. He is a professor and chair of the Department of Chemical and Sustainability Engineering at the University of Rochester. He's also host of the podcast Molecular Podcasting, author of the book Science Nonfiction, Behind the Scenes in University Research, Dr. Darren Lapomey. How are you today, Doctor?
Doing well, Chris. Just Darren is fine, thanks.
All right. Rochester.edu to find out the educational opportunities at Rochester University, and LapomeyGroup.org. Learn more about Darren's life. You can also listen to his podcast, all major podcast platforms. Your book provides two insightful ideas, and they are intertwined to be sure, but even if someone's not interested in the world of science and gaining into that realm, your story, I think, helps people understand the value of knowing a path, trying a few things along the way. Don't limit yourself by any means. And the role that a trustworthy mentor can serve. Talk about your path from into science for in this case. What did you see as needed on your part in devotion and dedication?
I grew up outside of Rochester, New York, in a small town that was surrounded by cornfields in every direction, and there weren't a lot of people in my family who went to college, and I was a big nerd. I grew up on Star Wars and Star Trek, and I wanted to make lightsabers and the transporter and warp speed and tricorders possible. And so I viewed science as the only legitimate route to magic. It all looked like magic to me. And so I didn't know at the time that you needed to do a lot of school. So I was in school for 11 years after high school, learning how to keep good records, how to do experiments, how to work with my hands, how to make molecules and materials. And then eventually I discovered that there were many areas that my skills were useful toward. And one of those was in rehabilitation of swallowing function in cancer patients. Another is the manufacture of solar panels and battery materials. And another area that we're very excited about is in haptics, so using materials that we synthesize in the lab to understand and manipulate the human sense of touch. And I've had the opportunity to work with organizations like the U.S. Air Force, and also with organizations like Sigma Z, which is a scientific advocacy organization. I've received an award from President Trump, but I've also had an experience where my work was called out by Ted Cruz's Senate committee for being woke. And so it's been an interesting life, a lot of contradictions, but a lot of joy and the ability to work with smart young people and to hopefully get some new knowledge out in the public.
Through your experience, having gone through various universities and various aspects of your work, how has the structure of research within universities changed over the years?
I started my undergraduate research when I was at Boston University, and it strikes me that there was a little bit less competition, I would say, for research grants. You know, if you look at papers and grant proposals that were written 20, 30 years ago, I don't believe that many of them would be funded now. There is much more competition. The standards for rigor and what we call preliminary data are so strong that there are some people who would tell you, you know, maybe to get a rise out of you, that when a scientist submits a grant, they're getting the money for work that's already been done because the standards are so high for reproducibility and, let's say, de-risking. I did my PhD at Harvard in the Department of Chemistry, and I was largely insulated from the fundraising aspects as a graduate student, but I did do things like prepare figures for grant proposals for my advisor. I did a little bit more of that when I was a postdoc in chemical engineering at Stanford. And then it wasn't until my 12-year stint as a professor and associate dean at UC San Diego that I was really involved in proposal development. And now at University of Rochester, things really have become more competitive. And it's not just that we're competing with ourselves, or with each other, I should say, with other scientists to get our ideas funded, but we are competing on an unstable platform where you can get a grant funded or nominally recommended for funding, and then that funding can be pulled at the last second, you know, sorry, administration priorities have changed and this funding is no longer coming through. Let me give you an example. Sure. So there is a student in my group who happens to be deaf, and she was part of a National Institutes of Health training program for deaf individuals. And that program was discontinued in the early part of 2025. We had another proposal that was funded by the Department of Energy on electronics sustainability. So making materials that would allow you to take solar panels and other electronic devices apart so that you don't need to mine new rare earth materials. And that program was discontinued for 18 months until the Iran war, when it looked like presumably, well, we need to look for more ways of developing alternative energy. So some of those programs got funded. And now we have to rehire for that project. Now, there's another grant that was recommended for funding, which was designed to train students from parts of the country that don't have access to research labs. So these are universities and colleges in rural places where we invite them to University of Rochester to do research in our research labs. And that is designed to expand access to scientific education and technical training. And that program was recommended for funding. And then we got an email a few days ago saying, sorry, it's not going to be funded after all due to a shift in priorities. So it's not only has the competition increased, but also the uncertainty has increased.
Dr. Darren Lipomi, professor, chair of the Department of Chemical and Sustainability Engineering at the University of Rochester, author of the book Science Nonfiction, Behind the Scenes in University Research, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. With funding, as I referred to back in the introduction, being redirected to a degree by federal funding outlets, what's the risk for university research now? You talk about how, I mean, do you have to shift your selling focus? Do you have to push more on here's where we will wind up as opposed to here's the idea where I hope will get us to where we wind up? How is this going to change research with the universities already being a little more choosy in what they see as priorities now?
One of the biggest risks that we face is the disincentivization of students to want to go into science because it is much harder to get a funded PhD position. So a PhD student in the sciences and engineering, they receive a their tuition benefit, but they also receive a salary. And I think some people would be surprised to hear that. So they are part worker, part student. In terms of the type, in terms of the way that the uncertainty has affected the research projects in which we engage, I would say that there has been a triangulation to try to anticipate what priorities are going to be of the administration, or to cast ideas that we, you know, that we're qualified to work on in terms that would be palatable to funding agencies. So if, for example, you have a new material that allows you to recycle solar panels by snapping your fingers, you can dissolve a solar panel or dissolve all the glue and recycle the silicon and all the other materials, that description is kind of left coded, right? It's this environmental application. But on the other hand, you could take the same scientific approach. You could answer exactly the same scientific questions. How do you encapsulate electronic materials that, in addition to silicon, also have indium and germanium and cobalt and all of these conflict minerals and minerals that are controlled by governments that either have human rights abuses or with governments with which we do not have strong political relationships, or that we would rather have a domestic source of these materials, then you're shifting the argument from something that's, you know, green coded to something that's domestic production coded. So you can do the same research, but frame it in a different way. And is that disingenuous? You know, I don't know. It's an open question. The fact is that it is useful in both areas.
No, and it's for the greater good. It's just a matter of the perception of what that good is, depending on who you are trying to secure funding from and what you're looking for funding for. We have to wrap up here, but for you listening, I'm sure many people have always asked the question, well, what's the importance of research being done at universities? Is it money better spent? Some people jokingly will say spend it on the sports as opposed to the research, but that's another talk from another time. But I think with what Darren writes in his book, Science Nonfiction, it gives you that understanding of the value of impartial, truly focused on priorities that will serve others through discovery and through research and through development. Without the research, the other things that bring ideas to life, to get to that life, you need the foundation. That's what research is all about. And again, free to find true, honest, and factual research, not preferential research like some are trying to urge to have happen. Again, the book is Science Nonfiction, Behind the Scenes in University Research. He is a professor at Rochester University. Learn more about their learning opportunities, rochester.edu. You can also find out more about Darren at lepomegroup.org. And be sure to listen to his podcast, Molecular Podcasting, wherever you listen to your podcast, whatever platform that may be. Darren, thank you for giving us an understanding of a valuable part of all our lives. It's the beginning stage of those parts, but it's an important stage. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris.